everybody, and welcome back to Dual Screens Crossplay Podcast. This is our Game of the Year edition for 2020. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, he's over there. Which way is he? He's this way. There he is. Hi. He's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I'm okay. I feel like I don't deserve my higher brain functions today.
So, no, there's no argument for me, Andy.
You know, my little thumb situation.
Yes.
So I finally went band-aidless like the other day.
Okay.
And the second I had it off, I re-injured myself in the same exact spot.
Perfect.
As I was putting away some trash, I just nubbed the scar and I reopened it. And I was like, I'm too dumb to have limbs.
Good Lord.
I should be That's like terrible. A hamster or like a gerbil.
There's something wrong with something. Well, we'll see.
I don't deserve these things.
When you come back in another life, I'm thinking gnat or something. Like fruit fly, gnat. you've done some things in your life, and of course over there on the other side, he's Taylor. Hi, Taylor. How are you?
Hi, Steve. I have a pimple growing in between my eyes on the bridge of my nose. Perfect. It hurts really bad. I'd rather we not talk about it.
Now, is it a pimple or is it an ingrown hair?
I don't know.
Because the ingrown hairs I found were always the more painful of the two variety.
Or is it a
boil? It's just painful because it's in a real tender spot, sure. You know? It's
You're a real tender like spot.
soft skin right around there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I had like I had a weird day yesterday, and I'll tell you what happened. I was really excited for yesterday because I was going to do my marble stream, right? Mm-hmm. But I also had my fantasy hockey draft. So what I was actually going to do was I was going to run a marbles game in between my picks in the hockey draft. And I was going to make it this whole big thing. Then lunchtime came around. And this was around, I don't know, 2:30, maybe 3:00. And I said, you know what I bought myself for lunch? I bought myself a cup noodle. And I love cup noodle. Like, cup noodle is one of those comfy foods for me that I know is not good for me. I know it's like almost 500 calories of emptiness and I think 1,200 milligrams of sodium. Or something like that. So I was like, you know what? I want it. I'm going to have it. So I had it. And then I said, you know what? Not satisfied. I would like another. So I had two cup noodle soups. Two. Now, I want you to do the math here. That's about 24 milligrams of sodium. Okay?
2,400
milligrams. Just about. Right. It's somewhere around there. You guys could look it up. Either way, it's a stupid
4,000%
amount. Right.
Of your daily recommended.
It's a
sodium.
Dumb amount of sodium. Anyway, so I do this, and at around 5:05, like 5 minutes after I got away from my desk for work for the day, I went into my bedroom, and I was like, my fucking head is killing me. I can't see straight. My body was instantly in revolt mode. So I lay down and I pass out and I wake up at 8:00 and just like as if I just was laid out in the Serengeti and just dried like a prune. Massive headache all up the side of my face. Needless to say, I canceled my stream all because of sodium. So there's that. And then today I ran out of my seltzer. And there's, I don't like drinking flat water. I just don't like it. Out of a bottle, maybe if it's really, really cold. But you just don't get the same satisfaction out of a cup of Brita water, you know? So I came very close, and then I was reminded of the soup incident. But I came very close to just pouring some soy sauce in a cup of ice and just having a nice little drink. But I digress. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the Dual Screens Crossplay Podcast, the internet's number one gaming news podcast, starring people you've never heard of, probably. The show posts each and every Tuesday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, records live on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams on Tuesday nights starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and then later as a video version, YouTube video on youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And if you like this show, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a follow on Twitch, and give us a review on your favorite podcast service. It helps the show out tremendously. Andy, we have a big show coming up this week on the Dual Screens Podcast. Would you mind telling our listeners who we have in store for this Friday's episode?
Oh, shit. Is it really a big show?
It's a huge, yes.
I don't know.
Yes, we're talking to Neil Jones, who is working on a game called Never Yield, which we discussed on a previous interview with Head Up Games. That's long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tomorrow night, and I'm very excited.
This looks really cool. This looks like a really cool game. Look it up if you haven't heard of it. It looks like it's gonna be one of those games that's gonna be big on Twitch. It's gonna have a lot of people trying to get their best runs out of it. It's a kind of a left to right. It almost feels like an auto runner, but very stylized. And we'll see. We'll see what that's all about when we record that tomorrow. And that show is going to go up on Friday. If you want it early, go to patreon.com/NDS podcast. Just like our Patreon producers, Colton, the Apprentice Nestler, and FNH Paul. That's right. Your friendly neighborhood Paul. Because for $5, you get early access to all of the Dual Screens podcast episodes that we do actually record early. We will post it up there. But as little as $1 gets you into our Discord and all of that fun and a bonus episode every month that you vote the topic. Okay. This week, let's get into the show, because we are not going to be doing everybody's favorite current t-shirt, which you could buy on dualscreens.com/store, The Adventures in Gaming. We are not going to be doing our indie news segment, because this is all about our year-end awards. That's right, 2020 has, thank God, ended, and 2021, which was really just the expansion pack to 2020, is here. But we have games that we want to give awards to. Gentlemen, I'm excited about this. Taylor, I know you've been thinking about this all week, probably overthinking. You probably have docs and spreadsheets. How excited are you for this bad boy?
I'm very excited. And I have some tricks up my sleeve today.
Ooh, you're tricksy.
Buzz is over here in our Discord saying, oh, it's, I know who's going to win. I know what it's going to be. It's just going to be Andy and Taylor just picking the thing. Uh-huh. I got some stuff up my sleeve.
We have
don't
tricks.
You worry.
We have tricks up our sleeves. Andy, what about you, bud?
Yeah, I mean, these are all amazing games we nominated last year, and I want to talk about them in some detail. And again, just honor them and give them some proper respect and recognition and some awards that we can tweet about. Once we're done,
dive right in. Then let's get into the best multiplayer game. That's where we're going to start off. It's one of our smaller little topics here, but I think this has some great games. Let me remind everybody what games are on that list. We have Bacon Switch, which is a former guest of the Dual Screens podcast, a really awesome co-op action game. Really is what it should be called. We have Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War multiplayer. Which, if you don't know what Call of Duty's multiplayer is, I guess stop listening to the show, because this is a show about video games. Ghost of Tsushima Legends, which is the multiplayer mode for Ghost of Tsushima that came out a little bit much later, actually, after the game came out. Then there's Fall Guys, which took the internet by storm when it first came out. Temtem, the massive multiplayer online Pokemon-like game, which is phenomenal, but is still technically in early access, which is a little weird. And then Phasmophobia.
Isn't it in full release on console?
It is not. It is not. Technically, no. Technically, it is a $30 early access situation.
Oh.
But you can. It's an MMO, so it's going to live on forever. They're just going to say, here it is. Here's the celebration. You own it. Here it is. And then Phasmophobia, which, around, I want to say September or October this year, came out, and I don't know if it was right by Halloween or if it was a little before. My memory is failing me, but really took Twitch over. This game got made by one person, just sort of went bananas. So I can't wait to talk about all of these games. Why don't we start off with the 4,000, 5,000, 10,000, whatever you call it, pound elephant in the room. And that's Fall Guys, because I feel like out of all the games on this list, Fall Guys was the mainstream success. And I want to start with Taylor. I know you're not a huge Fall Guys guy, but I'd like to know your thoughts on this game.
I understand why Fall Guys does very well on Twitch. I understand why people like Fall Guys. I personally got very tired of it after playing like 2 weeks of the beta. You and I have tried to play it together a couple of times with the game not really keeping us connected all that well. And that's been really frustrating. But Fall Guys at its core is a really cool game. It's very wholesome. Like the memes around that game were very funny. But I think kind of the culture around Fall Guys was the best part of Fall Guys. I don't think the game necessarily was.
I think if your only experience with the game is that initial beta and a little bit of, you know, trying to play the main game, I would think that's a 100% astute observation about Fall Guys. However, the stuff that they've done to Fall Guys with their seasonal content, how they've remixed the stages, how they've made essentially a hard mode for more seasoned players by adding more obstacles into the courses that you were comfortable with already, is really takes this game into a whole new level. Like they take what made the game successful and they've built on it pretty rapidly. It's not a slow thing. Like we're not having to wait 4, 5, 6 months for new content. They're pumping these out. I think it's every 2 months at this point.
Yeah.
And the fun level kind of stays where it's at. And then I'm going to kick it over to Andy after this. Cause I know Andy, you and I fell in love with this game at PAX East.
Oh yeah.
The fun level of the game doesn't move, but the challenge level has gone up. And I think that was what the game was really missing from the beta. Like I think I got somewhere of like a dozen crowns in like the 1 week of the beta that I played. And then I got another dozen when the game first came out. I think I was around 24. And then when the new season came out, the medieval season, it was much, much harder for me to get those crowns. I don't know if it was just me getting used to the old levels, but or the competition kind of weaned out, you know, the younger players. But the game definitely has some legs, Andy.
Yeah, I think just going back to PAX East for a second, the game looked very unassuming at first glance, but I think the two of us knew that it was going to be something really special. And then when it came out, it was more than that. And again, to your point, when you talk about just continuing support for a game that has sold, I think at this point, over 30 million copies to date, where it's not the most expensive game to produce.
Yeah.
They could have walked away and said, okay, we've made a fuck ton of money. We have a massive player base. It's great for streamers. We can, you know, we can walk away or we can just slow things down and just release updates, you know, every 6 months.
Right.
At some point. But we're going on season 3 at this point because they know they have a voracious audience that just wants more stuff from this world. And again, it's like when you play it, it's a very different kind of fun. It's the kind of game where I don't mind losing or sucking so badly at it while I'm playing it.
Cause it's content. It's right. Fun. It's like, right. It is the living meme game.
And it's so rapid fire. You don't mind to lose. All right. You lose a match. You just queue in and go into the next one.
Right.
And I think its reach is sort of undeniable at this point. And it was a big surprise to see how well it did and to how much fun it ended up being. Cause we got a snapshot of it back at PAX and then the final game was just so much more than that.
Yeah. A game you put on here, you put on Ghost of Tsushima Legends. Why don't you take the lead on this one? Tell us why it's that you feel like deserves best multiplayer game.
Well, again, it's cause you would think multiplayer for a strong single player story driven experience can't be anything more than just a slap on. It's just the character template with different skins. We'll do some classes, we'll throw some enemies at them and call it a day, just to kind of cash in on the whole appeal of the game, its popularity,
right?
But there's actual thought and care put into this mode, which I wasn't expecting. How they took the game's backdrop, did this whole like fantastical Japanese mythology spin behind it, gave us 4 distinct classes, made it really fun to play. You're building off of that core gameplay that is in Ghosts of Tsushima and making it work in 2 distinct modes, the two player story aspect and the 4 player defend the territory situation. And to see it pulled off in a way that wasn't just, yeah, just a main game, but with you and a friend, I appreciate that. It was more than just an act.
Yeah.
Now it's very finite as well. Like you've done all the story missions and got the max weapons and all the best of the best legendary gear, and you've bested the nightmare modes and the bad of the story of the Oni story missions. Okay. You'll likely walk away.
Yeah.
I've dipped my toe back in a few times post release. Not as often. I mean, I was there for a long time when it first came out. I was hooked to that shit. I was doing the daily missions, all that stuff. But yeah, it's without anything to come back to. It's
for me, the best part was the co-op story mode stuff. Right. Playing through that and seeing how they tied the legend of the four classes into, or the legend of the ghost into the four classes, the four separate classes, was really cool. That was probably the best part about that game. The horde mode and all that stuff was great when you first started, but when you realized just how much of it was the same, even when you went up in difficulty, it made it where I didn't really care to get the best gear at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, it was help. It was numbers going up, but once you learned that they weren't going to support it after that, that what you got was what you got, I felt like there was no need to get the best thing. Which kind of just goes to my preference of those types of games, where the ceiling has to be high enough where it seems like magic if you could reach it, but it still has to be attainable, you know? Mm-hmm. But it can't be low enough where you're going to attain it and then there's nothing else that's magical above it, you know? So I feel like that's kind of where it was lacking. I think that they have a really cool formula on their hands that they could go forward with this, possibly with the franchise in a completely new direction. But for me, it wasn't the multiplayer experience. It was a really fun experience for about a week or two for me, and then that was it. Now, Taylor, did you dive into Ghost Legends?
I know you didn't touch it at all.
But a game that you did touch, and you touched really hard, was Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. So why don't you take the lead on Steve, that one?
Did I touch the shit out of Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War? Mm-hmm. I've told this story on this podcast before. I put out a tweet saying that Black Ops Cold War was the first Call of Duty in 11 years that I wasn't going to be purchasing at launch. Because I was very disillusioned after Modern Warfare with the franchise. The last couple of games I would buy, play for a month, and then just kind of like put down and forget about, right? And then launch day came, and I'm a weak little bitch, and so I bought it. And this game has brought me back to the Call of Duty franchise in a way that I haven't felt since like Black Ops 2, Modern Warfare 3, like that era. I have had an absolute blast playing this game with our friends. We play it multiple times a week. And I feel like they do a really good job with the progression in that game. I talk about it before, but the reason I ultimately decided to get back into it was I love just like leveling stuff up in Call of Duty. You know, leveling up your prestiges, leveling up your guns, getting the attachments, getting your camos. Right. Like, I love that progression. And they have so much of that in this game. It is just so satisfying. Like, after every single match, it's like there's something that you're leveling up and making progress on. And so even if you get your ass kicked in that match, like, it feels like you're moving towards a bigger goal. The guns, there are broken guns like in every Call of Duty. Some of the maps kind of suck. Like, I am frustrated with skill-based matchmaking, but at the end of the day, I have had so much fun with this game.
You know, I want to talk about the skill-based matchmaking because the way they do it, it really does hinder the actual multiplayer fun of the game. But the other thing that I think that they do that really doesn't mix well with their skill-based matchmaking is how they do unlocks for guns. Because you could be playing with a gun and unlocking these attachments, but you don't unlock the gun until you get to a certain level. If you're not a skilled player, you're not going to unlock those guns the same rate that a skilled player will. And then if you're playing with that skilled player with you, on your team, and let's say you are level 35 and you're slowly unlocking your guns and they're prestige 3 and they have every attachment, every gun, they're doing the thing, you get pulled into lobbies with other people on the other team that have all those guns, all those attachments, and it makes your leveling much slower because you're not able to get your kills. You're not able to hold down things because you don't have the DMR with the best 5 attachments or 6 attachments, whatever it is. So I think that from a gameplay design perspective is flawed in a very deep and meaningful way. Yeah. That being said, the presentation of the game, how it feels, how it plays, the rare, albeit it does sometimes happen, but the rare connectivity issues. I do like most of the maps. I think the game modes are a lot of fun. The variety in the game modes, the amount of the fact that you could get 14 of your, 13 of your friends, get a lobby of and play a 7-on-7 game, a custom game list. Like, all of that is fantastic and makes it for a really, really nice, polished multiplayer experience.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you've said and more. I think they, Andy agrees also. Andy loves Call of Duty.
Andy's, I don't think played a first person shooter outside of Doom.
That might be accurate.
Maybe Wolfenstein?
Sure.
They started this in Modern Warfare, but I'm very glad that they got rid of the season pass system as well. The ongoing support for that game, getting all the maps for free, getting all the guns for free, all of the additions that you previously before Modern Warfare had to pay for, it is really nice. And it's nice to see that ongoing support, from the team over at Activision. So
speaking of, constant support, Temtem is a massive multiplayer online, basically Pokemon game for 30 something year olds. This is for players that grew up with Pokemon and kept saying, why Nintendo, make a Pokemon MMO. We want a Pokemon MMO. I want to play with my friends. I want to go through, do side missions and story and catch and trade and fight together. This game takes that dream and legitimately makes it a reality. If you told me, if Nintendo bought this game, took Temtem off of it, put Pokemon on it and replace the way you capture them, which is with like these little Temtem cards things. If you got rid of the cards and you put in Pokeballs, I would 1000% believe you that this is a Pokemon MMO. 1000% that it is a true, they put so much love into this game. So much so that I stopped playing it because I feel like in an early access, I don't want to play through something, burn through it. And then it finally releases its full release. And then like, I want to give it that it's due, but I did play plenty of it. This game is not just for us because we grew up with Pokemon. It also is aged up in its strategy. It's the way it does the rock paper scissor game is way less random. Critical hits and all of that stuff are basically gone. It's all about knowing your types, knowing your typings, understanding who's weak to what, what's strong against what, and there's a ton of types, by the way, understanding it and putting together a team that you know is going to get you through a fight. If you want to just team up with a friend, it's easy. You click their name, you say, join party, and you each carry 3 Temtem into battle. It's a 6v6 battle, usually most of the time. The game is just really, really, really well done. It's rarely has any issues. The story is dark, like the villain throws like a teenage girl off a cliff dark and like murders her dark. It's got very adult themes, which is really cool to see in a Pokemon like game. If you don't have this game, if you haven't tried it, it's available on PS5. I think it's $30. It's available on other platforms in early access as well. If you love Pokemon, if you grew up with Pokemon, but you wanted a grown-up version of Pokemon, Temtem is fantastic. I understand that, you know, you guys may not have played it, and I understand that that's, you know, might not give it its just due in this list, but for me, it's one of the best game, one of the better Pokemon games to come out in well over a decade.
Yeah, it almost feels like too good to be true in a sense that it can be that well made, even more so better than an official Pokemon game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had friends who they feel bad in enjoying it too much because they're cheating on Pokemon. It's like, I can't praise this other series at all because it's
right.
It does things better than what my beloved Pokemon does. But it's true. It's frightfully addictive. And it's very well made. It's got high production value, amazing assets and artwork. And the battles are actually fun.
And they're hard.
You're not button mashing like, it's okay, just, I'm going to mash this one attack and just get through it and just call it a day.
No, you have to think.
You have to use the higher brain function.
Yes.
Again, I'm not too good at, but no, I still managed to do well in a game like this.
Now, Andy, another game that we fell in love with at PAX East that unfortunately came up against the behemoth of several other games when it came out, and that's Bacon Switch.
Makes me sad.
This had a couple of issues at launch. Number one, the Switch version was barely ran. That was a big problem. So we're not talking about the Switch version when we're talking about this game.
Listen, we're living in a post-Cyberpunk world, so what is bad optimization now?
True.
It's so relatable.
True.
Compared to that, it's amazing.
True.
It's a showpiece for the Switch is what it is.
Exactly. Bacon Switch is a more arcadey kind of overcooked style game where you're just punching the shit out of dough, making it grow to a big size and then throwing it into a kiln, basically racking up higher scores, unlocking more levels, unlocking skins for your chefs. It's 4-player co-op. It's a blast to play. I am sad that we weren't able to get this game to work the way we wanted it to work, because couch co-op on this game is an absolute blast. It is probably, I'm just going to go ahead and say it, if you're playing this game couch co-op, it is a perfect co-op experience. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It is just so much fun. It has challenge. It has whimsy. It has just all the nonsense you would want, yelling at your friends, but also like the satisfaction of getting through a level, the teamwork that's involved, so much fun. It even made me not hate Buzz Killington when we played that time.
That's
together.
Quite a feat. Yeah, yeah,
it is. It is. It is. Andy, what do you remember
winner
about
of the
this
category.
Game? Yeah.
Well, you know, I think this game came out like in the early pandemic days. I feel like just when things were getting going with that and people were super not going anywhere, this couch co-op game kind of dropped out of nowhere. It's like, well, that's nice. I can't enjoy that with anyone right now. But when you do actually play it with someone, because you can't, this is not a single player game. You'll go
try
to do single player. But it's more fun, less stressful than an Overcooked sort of a game. Similar bones and foundation. There's orders to sort of like be mindful of in terms of spicing and flavoring your little dough animals to feed the big giant oven thing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's full of charm and it's just fun when you play it. And it sucks that it didn't get enough attention when it first came out. I feel it came and went in a sense.
It needs a better solution to online play.
It got DLC at some point, I'm aware of.
Yes. Yep.
Not sure what that was about, because it was like off the radar by the time that was released.
It's true.
But it's a shame. It's a shame. And we're part of the problem. We should have played it more.
Now, Taylor, you are what some of us on the internet refer to as a baby back bitch when it comes to horror video games, just like me.
100%.
But for some reason, there is a horror game out there that you and I we played separately, we played together, that we actually enjoy. And that's Phasmophobia. What is it about this game that we love so much?
Yeah, so on my Twitch stream, I had a community challenge for me to play Phasmophobia, right? Or no, we played together for our 400 followers stream.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because people had been begging me for months to play this game. And I hate ghosts and demons and all that. Like, that shit is just the worst to me.
He's a good Christian boy, I think. I don't know.
Forever, I was just like, no, 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 no. And finally, I was like, you know what? I'm a man of the people. I'll give them what they want. And I played, and I really enjoyed myself. In a genre that I hate, in a janky-ass game that... like, the animations make no sense, and they look so stupid, and they're just, like, super silly, and, like, half the time the ghost doesn't do what it's supposed to, and, like, it's wild, right? But through all of that, I had a blast because I was playing with my friends, and they were, like, kind of showing me the ropes, and I was scared shitless, and it was a great time, honestly. And I liked it so much that after I was forced to play it, I went back and I played it again, which should say a lot.
The jank is part of the charm. Andy, I don't know. Have you played this yet?
I have. It's, you know, the horror snob in me just says this isn't horror. This is like a jump scare game. This is like that supercut.
Absolutely.
In like when they show the next like Paranormal Activity movie, it's like the audience cut of them reacting to jump scares, mm-hmm. to get you like into the movie. It's like the reaction to the game in a sense.
Yeah,
and I would never describe a horror game as having a blast, as Taylor puts it.
Well, so
but I see why why the appeal is there.
It's a blast because
it's those who are watching you.
But the actual detective stuff that you have to do to figure out who the ghost is and how to trick it into letting you catch it essentially on camera, and like, it has a really nice gameplay design there that mm-hmm. that really sort of encapsulates what it is to play together with friends. Like, you could fuck with each other to try and, you know, close and open and slam doors to like make your friends think that things are screwed up. The sound is really particular.
You can run and hide in a corner on top of your friend and then sit and freak out, and then the ghost will come and kill your friend instead of you.
Right. You know, things
I
like
did
that.
To Steve a couple of times.
Right, right. It's just got a really fun, like, spooky, scare yourself, scare your friends, have a good time. It's a, you know what it is? It's
right,
a popcorn
it's like,
horror film. That it's a popcorn horror game. That's what
it's
it
like,
is.
It's like how Five Nights at Freddy's is scary. It's the same idea.
I've never played Five Nights at Freddy's.
It's about that, you know, that instant like blah, like in your face yeah. sort of a thing, which yeah. I hate so much.
Indeed. So that those are the six games, and we went long on this one. We spent about 25 minutes on that.
So let's be mindful of that for the next
we will.
Categories.
We will. No, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine.
Going to go into next year.
We have a lot less nominees for all of this stuff. All right. So, gentlemen, I want to get your votes on this, and then we're going to nail it down based on votes. We're going to have like a last arguments thing. Andy, what's your multiplayer game of the year? Hello?
Andy?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm here.
What is your multiplayer game of the year?
Oh, Lordy. You know, I think I'm going to go Fall Guys on this one.
Okay.
I know I nominated Ghost of Tsushima. Shishimi.
That's okay.
But, you know, that's because I think it needs a nomination. That's why that
I understand.
Up. But I think looking at this list overall and seeing the facts laid bare to me in this conversation, I'm going to pick Fall Guys as the multiplayer game of the year.
Taylor, what's your multiplayer game of the year?
Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War.
Okay. I am going to go with Fall Guys as well. I think it's very close for me between Fall Guys and Call of Duty as well. But I think Fall Guys has done something to multiplayer gaming that I think Call of Duty's kind of taken advantage of, or not taken advantage of, has taken for granted. People are always going to go to Call of Duty nobody needed to go to Fall Guys, and everybody ran to Fall Guys, and it's still one of the most popular games out there. It redefined what the Battle Royale is and what you can do with a Battle Royale. So I think as a 2-1 there, I think we're going to go Fall Guys as the best multiplayer game of the year. This is
for my argument in the defense of Call of Duty so that we can move on here.
Sure.
In a day and age where Call of Duty is like the meme game because it comes out every year and it sells a bajillion copies, but it sucks and everyone hates it. I think this is the first time in a long time that it doesn't suck and everyone hates it.
I still got to play that campaign.
That's my justification. I haven't even launched it. Haven't even touched the campaign.
Me either. let's go into the best Nintendo first party game, because this should be a shorter conversation, because there were only two games that we threw up on here. We brought up Age of Calamity, the Legend of Zelda, the Musou 2, and Animal Crossing New Horizons. Obviously, a lot of people really love Age of Calamity. They say it's one of the better Musous ever, really. It is a above and way beyond what the first Hyrule Warriors was. But in my opinion, my vote is going to Animal Crossing, just because of what Animal Crossing was, what Animal Crossing is, what Animal Crossing did at the time that it came out, the support it's been getting, the systems that they had in the beginning that they've completely iterated on in ways that you didn't expect them to, with their seasonal content and like all that fun stuff. The only thing I think is really piss poor about Animal Crossing is its online connectivity. It's just a chore to do. I wish that was just a lot easier.
That's Nintendo for you.
But that is a very specific, that I don't put that on the developers of the game. I put that on the publisher of the game. It's Nintendo saying this is how it has to be, and they're like, but this, fuck you, and they're like, well, then we don't make video games, sir.
We can't devolve.
So for me, I'm going with Animal Crossing New Horizons. Andy?
Yeah, had this been Breath of the Wild 2 we were talking about, maybe there'd be some contention with this category. But I think, listen, I love Hyrule Warriors. It's a great franchise, great game, Age of Calamity. But Animal Crossing, it came at a time where we most needed it, I think, in the world. And it turned people who don't play video games into gamers. I've had friends who never touched a gaming console since maybe the NES days, Genesis, really, really pushing it. And this was just, it was so much in the culture that it turned the most casual players into addicts, playing every single day for hours on end. And that's magical.
Yeah.
And you know,
this was meant to be a game that you play like for an hour a day. And I was playing for like 7 hours a day.
Yeah.
It was a problem. Taylor?
Next to Age of Calamity 2, it says, I guess, ? And we have had an asterisk next to Animal Crossing for 2 weeks now.
I understand that Paper Mario came out as well. I get it.
No,
but
I don't think that even deserves to be nominated. It wasn't that good of a Paper Mario game.
Yeah, it was... I don't know, man.
Sad to say. Didn't live up for me.
It is what it is. Let's get into the best Xbox first party game. We had not Battletoads, Grounded, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, and Minecraft Dungeons. I am proud to say that I have played all of these games on this list, and I can, without a doubt, undoubtedly say that Ori and the Will of the Wisps is the better of every game on this list.
100%.
It is better than 80% of the games on all of our lists. What a delight it is to play those two games, Ori and the Blind Forest and Ori and the Will of the Wisps. It is just a beautiful experience that I wish I gave more credence to before the coming to Game of the Year, because it was never on my radar. It was never something I gave a shit to play, because I don't like the platforming. I don't like I'm not into that kind of thing. But it was one of those games that you played it on, you put it on, and you were like, oh, I like this. Oh, this is nice. I'm enjoying myself. Taylor, what about you?
Kick you in the balls.
And then it kicks you directly in the taint.
So just to recap, I have played all of these games except for Battletoads.
Well, no, not Battletoads was nominated.
Yeah, yeah. So right. That's fine. I did not like Grounded, but I don't like survival games. I thought Minecraft Dungeons was awesome, but Ori and the Will of the Wisps is one of the most beautiful games I think I've ever played in my life. The thing that they do with the camera where they get like really, really close to Ori and then slowly as you're progressing through these stages, like draw it back until it, there's a point where you can barely even see your little glowing blue character mm-hmm. move across the screen and you just see this expanse is incredible. The things that they do with the camera in a 2D action platformer is just absolutely awesome. The neon effects and lighting and stuff in that game are just incredible.
The art direction is yeah. superb.
Absolutely superb. Gorgeous. Yeah. And the game has some really incredible, surprising depth to it that I don't think you would expect from an action platformer like that. There's a lot of nuance to the combat if you really want to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
Ori does such a good job of like getting you in this flow state where you just like start seeing enemies and kind of puzzling together these combat encounters that kind of like build to a crescendo when you run into these really amazing and terrifying bosses and stuff.
But you don't, but the best part about it is you don't have to do that. Like the best part yeah. about it is like if you, it leads you along in a way that it turns off your brain in exactly. overthinking exactly. everything, and it makes it just kind of happen. And you're just like, oh yep. shit, that was really pretty and really nice. And I feel like I actually learned something and did something, but I wasn't trying to at all. Really yep. quickly, I want to get Andy's thoughts.
Yeah, I don't get choked up often when it comes to what is a Metroidvania game in a sense, but this world has a way about it to really get you emotionally invested in its characters and its world. And you can't say enough good things about the art style. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to even try at this point because it is breathtaking to look at, and it has the gameplay to match the aesthetic. And this is when they're at their best, Microsoft, when it's, mm-hmm. when it comes to games like this, that you can tell it's driven by passion and not by a dollar sign. It's all about right. the art form.
100%. Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations to Ori and the Will of the Wisps. Now it is time for the best Sony first party game. We have MLB The Show 20, The Last of Us Part 2, Ghosts of Tsushima, Spider-Man Miles Morales, and Demon's Souls. I feel like this is going to be very tough to give the award to. I'm going to start with Taylor. I'm going to let Taylor start this up because... I honestly don't even know if I've made up my mind yet, to be honest. The time's coming.
This one's easy for me because I've only played one of these games. So my winner is MLB The Show 20. And I think that San Diego Studio is incredible and deserves way more credit than what they get. I know it's not going to win this award. But MLB The Show, this has been the most supported MLB in the history of the franchise. They have put out more free content, done more events, put more cards in the game than they ever have in the past. The only real gripe I have with the game is the franchise mode continues to take steps backwards, but it seems like pretty much all sports games are kind of going down that same path where franchise isn't as much of a focus. It's a real shame.
Right.
But especially in comparing this game versus 2K, NHL, Madden, FIFA, the amount of care that they have for their non-microtransaction purchasing players is awesome. And I love the level of free content that they're putting into that game.
It's a fantastic franchise. Awesome. It really is a fantastic franchise. And you know, I think it had there been a true baseball season where real love for the game could have been in full force with fans and all that stuff, this game probably would have had a little bit more traction this year. And the fact that they didn't do a next gen version with the release of the consoles, you know, may have hurt it in some way, shape, or form, or like at least.
It's 8 months into its life.
I know, but they do
point,
it.
You know?
But they do it. They did it for others. You know, they made the cross. Whatever they figure something out. Or at least they could have said, you know, one's in the works for the following year, but they didn't even do that. Andy, I want you to
I feel like whatever I pick is going to be the winner here. And
that's why I want to go first.
Right. Sure. You go ahead.
So,
cause I have a lot of things to say about all these other games. On the
so
list
Demon's here. Souls is a game that I admit that I did not play. But I do have things to say about it that I think make it not win Sony's first party game of the year. And that is that as much as it's a wonderful video game that Blue Point did incredible things for, it's still something we've seen before, not just from the original Demon's Souls, but for these Souls-like games over and over and over again. And It has big, grand, awesome. And I played the first one, and like I loved the first one, the first Demon's Souls. That is, it has grand, the original. Yes, it has big moments and just crazy. Like I can't believe I did that moments. But I feel like we've been down that road before in pretty much every Dark Souls game and Bloodborne. I think Bloodborne does everything better than Demon's Souls, as far as what I remember. And, you know, moving on from there, Spider-Man Miles Morales was probably the second most fun I've had playing video games this year, playing a video game. The first one being Final Fantasy VII Remake, which why is that not on our list? I'm pretty sure we put that on our list.
It's because it's on the game of the year
it's
list.
It's on a first party.
Oh, right. Right. Okay. Right. That's what it was. Okay. I was like, I'm pretty sure we said this, but anyway, yeah. Right, so that was like the most fun I've had in a video game. Miles Morales was a super, super close second. But it was an experience that again was kind of iterated on from Spider-Man and all that stuff. You already know my thoughts about MLB. The Last of Us Part II, I think technically from a technical standpoint, from a writing standpoint, from an acting standpoint, from a gameplay perspective, from narrative perspective, was probably the most excellently put together video game to come out this year, or in you could put it up against the whole generation, really, if you really want to. The game was just so incredible and moving, and the things that you thought you hated about the game when you were playing the first 5 or 6 hours of the game, you wound up going back and thinking like, holy shit, that was actually incredible. And they really did an amazing thing with this game, but it was a world that I knew, it was characters that I was already invested in. So my game of the year is going to be for Ghost of Tsushima for Sony, because they took characters I never knew, they took a world I knew nothing about, they took combat that I thought I understood, and they turned everything on its head, and they made me fall in love with a universe that I wasn't familiar with characters I didn't know, with a part of history that I, admittedly, I think the only information I have on anything samurai related is The Fucking Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. Like, I know nothing. And they added, and it was basically like a samurai movie in a video game. And I think the ambition for that, I think the world is beautiful, how they create, handcrafted a world that even Japan loved in its authenticity and everything like that. It's just a wonderful video game. And I think it is the best and most exciting and most incredible gaming experience that Sony put out this year.
So Demon's Souls, I think I mentioned many times on this podcast, I love it because you wouldn't think that a remake of a PS3 game would be this good, but they pulled it off in a number of ways. But if it was a Bloodborne we were talking about in this category, it would be without a doubt my pick game of the year.
Mm.
But given that we've seen this before, like you said earlier, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's taking what's old and making it new again, which I'm not knocking how great this game turned out to be. It's so good. And to add to that, Miles Morales, it builds off of what made Spider-Man so good and so much fun to play. It's in that same universe, but with a different spin on who Spider-Man is, with Miles taking on the mantle and different abilities. But again, it's all a lead up to a Spider-Man 2 down the line.
Right.
Fuck baseball. Moving on. Now, Ghosts and Last of Us. Now, my initial desire with this was I leaned towards Last of Us Part 2 because it was a game, for all of its shortcomings with regard to the plot and its pacing, at least in my opinion, it was a game that broke me on so many levels. And it stayed with me long after I finished the game. But not too long after Last of Us 2 came out, we got Ghosts of Tsushima. And Sony asked us just after they gave us a game which made us second guess all of our emotions and to stop caring about life as a whole. They asked us to care about a brand new franchise and a new character in Jin in a new world. And I did. A lot, actually. And the characters, the backdrop, the multiplayer down the line that came on, which Last of Us did not get their component yet, so there's that part of it too. But that silky smooth gameplay, it's a game where the Japanese asked, why did white people make this? Why didn't we make this? Why didn't we make this? Why are crackers making this game and not us? It was that good.
I don't think they refer to us as crackers, do they?
Right, whatever, sure. Whatever.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not...
The Gaijin. The Gaijin made this. That's the appropriate term. But you get what I'm saying. It was a game where it didn't have to be that successful. It had to make a mark sales-wise, but it went through the roof on the heels of Last of Us Part 2.
Right.
We never had bought that game already, had spent their money. This other thing came out like within a month. I think it was 3 weeks after Last of Us Part 2 came out.
Yeah, it was 3 weeks.
And Sucker Punch just crushed it, dude. They really, really nailed it.
Yep.
And yeah, I'm with you on this, 100%. Ghosts.
Ghosts, best first Sony first party game. And now it is time for the best indie game of the year. Now, this is a weird category because there's so many. And the nominees that we gave here were Deep Rock Galactic, Carrion, Bugsnax, The Red Lantern, Spiritfarer, and Streets of Rage 4. I could say that I played every one of these games except Deep Rock Galactic because I didn't have a chance to jump into it. However, the concept is so right up my alley, so I'm very upset about that. The game that I'm going with, I'm going to start us off. The game that I think deserves this award is made to such a high quality and is so heartwarming but also heartbreaking and is absolutely gorgeous is Spiritfarer. And it is a game that will make you cry. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you sing. It'll make you crazy with some of its puzzle mechanics, some of its like ways that it gets you to shepherd your spirits off to the other realm. If you guys don't know what this game is, you're essentially you're a farer of spirits. You're finding these beings that are not ready to kind of leave the physical world. Their spirits are kind of hanging around, and you have to figure out a way to build their perfect little room on your boat and get them to come onto the boat. It's basically like what it reminded me of was when my grandfather was dying, and he was dying of cancer, and he was watching him kind of wither away on the hospital bed, and we're all there, my whole family, my aunt, you know, my dad, me, my mom, all my cousins, and we all left the room because we were, I think we were going to get lunch, and my mom said, we have to tell him he can go. He's not going to leave. He's stubborn. We have to tell him he can go. And so we had lunch. We went back, and my mom was adamant. She's like, you have to tell him. So I remember, I don't remember who did, but I know I remember distinctly my mom kissing his cheek, because he was so hopped up on morphine. He could not, he had stage 4 bone cancer and colon cancer. Like, he was seeing nothing. He was hearing and seeing nothing, or at least he couldn't tell us he was. And he kisses him in the cheek, and I heard her say, Frank, you can go. We're going to be okay. You know, all that stuff. And I couldn't get myself to do it. I was the last one to leave the room, and I couldn't get myself to do it. And this game is essentially that. You are giving these spirits a reason to go, telling them that it's going to be okay, and shepherding them to a better afterlife. And that, to me, was more than enough. That puts it above the any game that you could throw at me for, that was made by an independent studio, hands down. And as a matter of fact, this game would enter my game of the year conversation if 2020 wasn't just so crazy bombastic with the games that had come out from a AAA perspective. So Spiritfarer is my pick for the best indie game of the year.
Let the record show that you chose a game where you play as a cat.
Correct. Stenographer, please let the record show. Thank you.
Yeah, this was a tricky one as well. You know, looking at this list, I feel we left too many games out in this category.
So many games. Far Gone. I can't believe I left that Far Gone.
I had 5 more games.
I was like, what about Panzer Paladin? That was a game I loved the shit out of this year as well. Yeah. That should have been on the list. But that's okay. That's all right. Yeah, it's tough. Streets of Rage 4, I think I waxed on this last time for a little bit, how it does. It brings the formula back in a very modern and fun way that really can't be ignored. Red Lantern, it's the charm of it. It's, you know, the Alaskan sledding dogs, and you're trying to survive, and it's a roguelite, but it's not too intense. It holds your hand, kind of. It makes sure you don't fail as much. And again, Ashley Birch just totally crushes that performance.
Incredible job. Absolutely incredible job.
Bugsnax, I feel if it was the best indie game meme of the year, maybe. That game was all about the meme when it first was announced. And yeah, it did live up, but, you know, enough for a nomination, I feel, but not to
Bugsnax is fucking crazy.
It is. Like, it is
like,
crazy.
The premise of what you're doing and, like,
right,
all that stuff, but just the actual story and is, like, really sweet and right, and kind of adult. I don't know. It's one of the most right, bizarre experiences I had
and
all year.
Again, I was leaning so much into Carry On because I just love, this is the ultimate Andy game. It's you're playing as a blob that eats scientists and devours their limbs and spits them out. And
delicious.
It's a horror film. It's like,
yeah,
it's the blob video game. It's why I love Maneater so much.
Maneater's great.
Because he's fucking shark eating people. But that game is all style, but Spiritfarer is style and substance. And I have to give it to them because it's the kind of game where it's all bright colors and you think it's all going to be good. But you're talking about death, and we've all experienced that at some point in our lives in a very real way. And this game, I feel, did not get enough love from people when it came out. There was no real celebration in this game. And it's again, to your grandpa, Steven, like I thought of my dad when I was playing this game. And again, it's dealing with really deep issues, but in a charming sort of quirky way.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah. It's like, so it was like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Right.
Like beautifully hand-drawn and animated. Right. And it's just so, so bizarre how those themes kind of came together. Taylor.
I feel like I should have gone first because I do not have an emotional story because I did not play Spiritfarer.
Follow that, sucker.
Yeah, I played every other game on this list. Actually, I didn't play Streets of Rage 4 either.
Streets of Rage 4 is just not that good to me. Like, I feel like it's yeah. I mean, it's a good beat 'em up, but it's like its difficulty curve is ridiculous.
Play Battletoads and then play that. You'll see how good it is.
So for me personally, the best indie game of the year is not on this list. A handful of the best indie games of the year are not on this list because they are in our game of the year category.
Right.
This year was absolutely incredible in terms of indie games, indie development. And so this category feels a little weird for me. And maybe Spiritfarer would have, hit a little harder than some of these others. I will say from a technical standpoint and just pure dumb fun, we haven't given a lot of conversation to Deep Rock Galactic.
Yeah.
That game is a blast. It is just the coolest, silliest little game ever. You're a little team of dwarves going to this like asteroid, mining the shit out of it and killing aliens. Like, it's awesome. It's Left 4 Dead with dwarves and aliens in space. Like, it's so much fun. My choice though is the Red Lantern because that game is beautiful. The art style is incredible. As Andy said, Ashley Birch does an incredible job as the only voiced character in that game. Her really carries it. Like,
yeah.
She does an incredible, incredible job.
You think they asked her to do the dog bark sounds while she's in the studio? Like, while you're here, Ashley, just do some woofs and barks and...
Yeah, Ashley, we've got a couple more lines for you. And then they just, like, pitched it up and down for the different dogs just slightly. Yeah. No, but the heartfelt connection that you make with your unique team of dogs is really cool. And it's that same group of four dogs for every single run that you do. And so you become like intimately familiar with their quirks. And like, you know, when you run across a skunk, your dog is going to go and chase it. And you're going to have to like, kind of scold it, but then it'll feel bad. And you go and pet it. And it's awesome. The level of like love and care and attention they have for your relationship with the dogs and stuff is really, really cool. And so the Red Lantern is my pick.
It was an interesting way to do the roguelite too, because it had 100%. Anytime you failed, it was basically, it was a dream that she had. She was daydreaming or a dream, and she'll write like, in my dream, this thing happened. So like, I'm going to write that down. So now you have a little bit more information as you're going, but it seemed like throughout my playthrough that the game had, it was almost like a maze, right? But you can't see anything except for where your pen hits the paper. That's how it feels. It felt like it was like, okay, there's one path to get from here to here. That's how you get it. There it is. And then it's like, you hit a wall because you did the thing wrong. Okay. But now I know what the thing wrong is. So now, and I know how to get from point A to that thing that I did wrong. So now I'm going to go through this thing. Now, I don't know, because I only did the one playthrough. I don't know if you can go multiple paths to get to the same point A to point B.
You can.
But it felt like it was stringing you along a little too much. That was my only complaint about the Red Lantern. Sure. It felt like it was almost like Oregon Trail in that way, where it was like, okay, well, you have here, here's, you could make this terrible decision, or you can make this not as terrible decision. Which one do you want to do? And you're like, yeah. Well, terrible decision? I don't know. It's like, ah, shit, everyone died.
Yeah, I think they would run opposed to like what this game is trying to show you. Like, it's a lighter side of that genre.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Let's not be too intense.
No, it was a dream. It was a delight
this
to play.
Cute dog game. Yeah.
Exactly. It wasn't rage inducing. It was, oh snap, what did that thing happened? Oh, okay. But now I can do
or
this.
Or it's like, oh, should I kill that rabbit? I don't want to kill it. It's so cute and fuzzy.
I have too much food. Not enough bullets for the bear that's gonna chase us. So it looks like Spiritfarer is taking that award. So congratulations to Spiritfarer. That's gonna make a nice tweet. I'm gonna tweet the hell out of that. All right, so now it is time for our nonsense awards.
Yes.
And then we're gonna get into our game of the year. This is the filler part. So let us know your nonsense award. Everybody in the chat right now or watching later on YouTube, write in the comments section right now an award you want to give to something from 2020 in video games. Name your award and then give your recipient the award. We would love to read those on next week's show. So the first one I want to start off hard, long and hard. Andy, it is the best cock award, and this was one of your awards. Please take it away.
Well, now I'm wondering, can I give it to multiple games or just the one game?
Whatever you, this is your award, buddy.
Wow. Okay, so this award goes to two games. The first one is Chicken Police.
Great game.
Oh my god.
Fucking hilarious.
If
so
you have
good.
Not played this game,
so
I'm not even going to even describe it to you. Just by the name alone, Chicken Police. Go and get it. You will not be disappointed. And the second entry in this award goes to Midnight Castle Succubus DX.
Oh boy.
It is the game that made me fall in love with 8-bit dicks and boobies, and has just filled my Steam library with a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah. Yep. That'll
and
do it.
I'm telling you, I'm on several lists now more than ever.
Oh boy!
Because of what I've purchased since I played this game.
Yeah, the FBI is.
It's a game that it keeps on giving, and giving, even when you say no, it keeps on giving.
So remember, folks.
Jesus Christ!
Remember, folks. These are the nonsense awards, and that was the best cock award. Next up is the best game I've played while taking a shit award. Whose award was that?
That was mine.
That was Taylor. Yes.
The winner of this game is going to be a little bit surprising because it's not a mobile game. It's a game on my Nintendo Switch.
Beautiful.
And it is Slay the Spire.
What a great, what a game. What a game.
That game,
great game,
is so addicting. I didn't want to put my Switch down, so I brought it into the bathroom and played it while I was shitting.
And then you didn't want your shit to end. You didn't want to wipe your ass.
Kind of makes you hope you were a little bit constipated while taking that dump. Like,
exactly.
Just to play a little bit longer.
Yeah. Slay the Spire is fucking awesome. If you like roguelikes, if you like deck building games, if you like doing math, like, this game is so fucking cool. Everyone should play it. It's on Game Pass. Go and get it.
I like doing math. I love it.
So the next award is one of mine. It's the What the Clusterfuck Award. And that's going to Cyberpunk 2077 release. Jesus Christ. Like, what a clusterfuck that whole thing was. I say what you want about it, the PC version being great and this, that, and the other thing. Like, whatever. Everything that happened from the minute that game was released up until their 1.05 update has been nothing but a clusterfuck. And now there's even more bullshit because apparently the Polish version of the FTC is visiting their studio. To make sure that they are making good on the promises that they have set out to fix the game. So
can we change the winner from the Cyberpunk launch to just CD Projekt Red as a whole across the entire year? Because you forget about the 11 months of bullshit before that too.
Yeah,
that took place.
Yeah. Maybe.
It was not a good year for them.
Maybe. We're just going to put their logo as the What the Clusterfuck right, Award.
Exactly. Exactly.
Next up is the Why the Fuck Isn't This Out Yet Award.
Yeah, this is a... I'm giving it to four games that I can't wait to play, hopefully this year.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Four games? We're getting out of hand
four.
Here.
Yes, I know. Four games. The first one is 30XX, which is the sequel to 20XX. Is a Mega Man X inspired roguelike side-scrolling platformer with amazing pixel art. Can't wait for that. The next is Infernax, which is a
how is that game
2.
Not out yet?
I know. And for those of you who want to listen to our interview with the team, that was episode 13 of the Dual Screens podcast. So check that out.
Also 30XX, we also did that show as well.
That was the PAX Online interview. I'm not sure when that was. It. That's a YouTube exclusive. So subscribe for that. Mm-hmm. That content. The next game, Iron Meat, which is a Contra-like game. It's like heavy metal meets Contra. It's imagine mm-hmm. the most metal version of Contra.
Pretty much
with
the
Darkstalkers, Hellraiser type shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Iron Meat. And the last game on here is She Dreams Elsewhere. This adorable Persona meets Earthbound top-down RPG, which is visually stunning for pixel art.
What a cool game.
Yeah. And for more on that, that was episode 19 of the Dual Screens podcast.
Yeah, we interview some devs, guys, so go check that out, you know, if you haven't already.
Every week.
Every single week. We haven't missed a week in like 3 years, so like...
It's very, very true.
Stop being idiots. Okay. This next one is one of mine. It's called the What's Old is New Award. And since we're giving these to multiple games, I'm going to give it to multiple games because fucking why not? The first one is Among Us because why not? That game came out 2 years ago and blew up all of a sudden and it's fantastic and it's new to me, damn it!
I fucking love Among Us.
It's such a good game. And I'm going to give it to another game and that is The Outer Worlds because I know it did not come out this year, but I loved it. And so there's that. The next award is the game I was for sure going to get into absolutely positively without a doubt, but didn't.
Yep, that one is mine. The winner of this category is Destiny 2. Because I spent a lot of fucking money on Destiny 2 this year, thinking I'm jumping back in on PC. This game plays so well on PC. I'm excited to get back into it. This game almost caused a divorce for me and my wife a couple of years ago. And so I stopped finally decided I was jumping back in. Jumped in, played a little bit of, actually a pretty good amount of the content that I missed from Shadowkeep, which is the expansion that released in 2019. And I was jazzed coming into Beyond Light. And I played Beyond Light for a total of 1 hour and 45 minutes. I spent over $100 on Destiny 2 this year.
Serves you right, Yakami. Could have got that on Game Pass on Xbox, I guess. Something like that.
No, wouldn't Yakami get it on Game Pass?
I don't know. The best game I forgot to talk about award.
Yeah, again, so much shit comes out at a breakneck speed. I forget to talk about things on the podcast sometimes that deserve to be mentioned. Sakuna of Rice and Ruin. I love this game. Not a single time that I mentioned it on the show. Not once. not like, oh yeah, I played it for like an hour the other day, or I just downloaded it for like over the weekend.
No, you completely ignored that one.
And I love it to death. Not one mention, not one syllable was uttered. But yeah, I loved it. I really do. And you should all play it because it's amazing.
All right. I think this is the last one on the list. This
I've got
is
one more also.
You do? Best game that hasn't come out yet?
Yeah, it's like the same as Andy's.
Okay. Mine is the person I hate playing games with the most award. And you could say, oh, it's probably Perger, because you guys play Among Us all the time and you yell at each other all the time. And you play a lot. No, it's not Perger. You could say, well, is it Mikey Kirsch? You play with him all the time. How could you hate playing games with him? Nay, it's not Mikey Kirsch. Then it's got to be Buzz Killington, right? Because Buzz Killington sucks on so many levels. No, it's not Buzz Killington. Buzz Killington is actually not shitty to play games with. The number one person I hate playing games with on this planet is because setting up the time where we're actually going to play games is a chore. Unlike any chore that I would rather eat the rotten asshole of a buffalo, to quote the angry video game nerd, than try and schedule a gaming session with this person. And then once you get a gaming session and it finally is here, all you hear is this. That person is, of course, my cohort, my co-host, my partner in dual screens, Andy Asimakis. Congratulations, Andy.
Award.
Congrats, Andy.
You did it.
I feel special.
You did it. You did it. Hopefully with your new office and our new YouTube and Twitch initiative to play more games and do more things, you will be more available to play games with, and you will actually show up instead of us wondering, hey, wasn't Andy going to play with us?
He was, but then he didn't.
Exactly. All right, Taylor, take it away with our final award.
The best game that hasn't come out yet award. I have two winners here. Winner number one is a game that I have just recently started playing. Rogue Legacy 2. That game's fucking awesome. If you liked the first one, it's that before. but it's still in early access. The second one, which if you look at my Twitter account, is going to come as a surprise to people.
Oh, my.
Is Escape from Tarkov.
Oh, boy.
Escape from Tarkov has so many fucking systems going on that all work incredibly well for an early access game, and they're super ambitious with it. They're like wanting to add so much more to it that's already like way above and beyond what any like first person shooter survival game is already doing. That game's really cool, and the fact that it's still in early access and probably will be for a multiple of years.
Yeah, forever.
Is nuts.
Just call it an MMO and stop making it an early access game at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. But Escape from Tarkov, I played the shit out of that game this year, and even though I'm a little bit disillusioned of it now, I cannot deny how great that game is. So
indeed. All right, so now it is time for the game of the year. This is going to be hopefully not too long of a discussion. But before we do that, we want to kick it to our mailbag. Now, is this an actual mailbag?
I don't know.
This is an actual mailbag question from Mr. Nuff.
He added a lot more context here in the Discord. Basically, he was saying he was watching another podcast. They were talking about the In Memoriam of Killzone.
Got it.
Killzone is dead. And so he spun that into the question that you see on your dock in front of you.
Okay, so he said that whole Killzone thing led me to think about the explosive growth of those free-to-play games becoming cross-play at the end of this gen. Are we seeing the end of console-exclusive multiplayer games? Are Halo or Killzone still system sellers in the age of cross-play? Killzone was never a system seller. It just wasn't. It was very underperforming any time it was a launch title, and I don't think it really did well according to Halo, or compared to Halo. I don't know. This is an interesting question. I mean,
personally, I think so. I think Xbox, with the moves they've been making lately, are very much already alluding that Halo is not going to be their main driving force anymore. That's why they acquired you know, studios like Bethesda and In Exile and the Outer Worlds guys, who I forget, you know, it's at the tip of my tongue, but you know, all of these amazing Obsidian. Yes, Obsidian, thank you. All of these amazing studios that develop like awesome first person RPGs and like, you know, stuff like that. I think is very much a sign of the times that Halo does not have to be their driving factor anymore. And Sony has already showed their hand with the PS4 generation, because they did not put out a single console exclusive first party multiplayer shooter. So I think absolutely. I think crossplay is the new standard, and
let console others
exclusives.
Do it.
Yeah, console yeah. exclusives in that space just aren't doing it anymore.
Yeah, I think you're going to get games of service a little bit, probably more likely like a MMORPG game of service that you know, could live on a console, or maybe not exclusively, you know, maybe your PC console sort of crossplay. But yeah, I think that Ghost of Tsushima Legends is probably the closest thing we're going to get mm-hmm. to a console exclusive multiplayer centric experience. It's a good question.
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree with you guys on that. I think the idea of a exclusive multiplayer game has kind of gone the way of the dinosaur at this point. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. I feel that first party studios should invest more in making, again, I'm a single player guy. Love my single player games to death.
So am I. Yep.
That's where I am in this, firmly planted in that category. But I'd rather them take risks on unique experiences than dumping money into a massive multiplayer game that will have a small audience and has a greater risk of failing, in a sense.
I don't care about them taking risks on that. I don't care about them saying, oh, I don't want it to be a carbon copy of what works somewhere else.
Right.
When they don't innovate on it, when they don't do anything different, when they're just making the same old, like the Killzone multiplayer was just a bad, it wasn't even Halo. It was a bad Call of Duty. Like it was just bad. It just didn't, I mean, it had at the end, Shadowfall, I think had a pretty good,
you should have mentioned Resistance.
But Resistance,
Killzone.
Yeah. 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 Resistance had better ideas, but it was just not right. implemented very well. And you had right. MAG, right? MAG was that was the I PlayStation mean, 3 exclusive.
What was it? Massive action game?
Massive action game. Action right? game. 264 or some shit players.
MAG.
It was huge, but it was way ahead of its time and it kind of played like garbage. Like they've tried, you know? They to me, let the people who make those games make those games. That includes Halo. Halo is still going to be a thing. It's just not going to be the thing. And,
right.
you know, let Master Chief come out every 4 years with his dumb Though, helmet and get over
it. I think it's always going to be console plus PC. Like, yeah. if SOCOM comes out at some point in our lifetime, it'll be PS5 plus PC. Just to bolster that audience a little bit. I doubt we'll see, like, only on PlayStation 5, like, a massive multiplayer, unless again, if you hinge on a massive IP like a SOCOM, I could see that. Why not? But I think more broadly speaking, that idea is kind of like, because people want the crossplay, they beg for it.
Yeah, they want to play with their friends no matter where their friends right. are.
Exactly.
Buzz says in the chat that it's funny that Sony had so many different shooters and they all failed. I don't think you could call any of them a failure, considering multiples of those games came out. Resistance was a trilogy and a damn good one that sold very well. And Killzone had 5 games, including... Liberation... It had 1, 2, 3, Shadowfall and Liberation, right? No.
Do you count the Vita game?
The Vita...
Mercenaries? Or
Mercenaries. Whatever? Was that the one it was called? So there was 6. Yeah. The Vita game was damn good, too.
I think...
Can't call them failures.
We have to consider this, though. Resistance is Insomniac. That's also Ratchet and Clank and now Spider-Man.
Right.
That's more money for Sony. And so they're working on those. Same for Killzone. They have Horizon now. That's their main cash cow. So they moved on from those FPS games. I wouldn't call them failures. They were all successes in their own right. Yeah, I would say that they're failures.
I think moral of the story is Sony just realized that they realized where their bread is buttered, right?
Right.
Third person action RPGs, like it's where they live. That's a weird wheelhouse. That's what most of their studios are really talented at doing. So why shoehorn another shooter in for catalog diversity when you can let your team go and make Spider-Man, or you can have them go and make Horizon?
Now, not one of them had a new release in 5 years. That's funny because neither has Halo.
Got him.
Halo hasn't had a release since October of 2015. Got him, dude. So it's been five plus years for your precious Halo.
Didn't they release that game on 360, Halo Infinite? Is what that footage looked like?
That was the OG Xbox. No, they released the Master Chief Collection that still isn't complete, and then now they shut it. Just never mind. It's supposed to be out, so suck it. Yeah, and it sucks so bad they could kick the can down the road. Okay, let's get into our game of the year little conversation because we are running late.
Oh boy.
Here. The list is as follows: Hades, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Risk of Rain 2, Fall Guys, and Yakuza Like a Dragon. Andy, I'm gonna let you go first.
Oh my god. So off the bat, I'm gonna trim some fat here. Yakuza, I didn't play it yet. I've heard amazing things, but that's gonna be kicked out of contention for me altogether.
Okay.
Fall Guys, already won my best multiplayer game, so you ain't gonna win here. Sorry, guy. Risk of Rain 2. It's an amazing game. But compared to Hades and FF7, nah, I don't think so. So that only leaves two games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hades and Final Fantasy VII Remake. This is Sophie's choice. This is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, Final Fantasy VII, you would think you're touching sacred ground.
Right.
Like an egg, just carefully, or a newborn baby, just so carefully handled. You don't want to break it. It's like, how do you take the game that was...
Mm-hmm.
FF7 was what Akira was to anime in the West, for RPGs here in the West. It was just...
Right.
It boomed up the genre in a huge way. And the idea of taking what was perfection... Even it was a mess with its translation and its story was all over the place. But it's iconic in every sense. It defined the PS1 era in so many ways. That Square Enix took Squaresoft's masterpiece from back in the day. And they made it work. They pulled it off with the most fun combat. And just hearing the old soundtracks being restored and remixed. Tears to my eyes.
It's a special experience for sure.
And seeing like the Avalanche team just more fleshed out and more humanized. God, Jesse's death scene. Fuck you, Square. I don't want to cry at that, but you made me cry anyway. But I am... Hades, again, was a game where I know Supergiant's catalog of games, I know what they can do, and they do it well. But when this game came out, it really caught me off guard, because I love roguelike games. I love all those games, but there was something about this that was wholly different than any other roguelike game I ever played. Now, for most people, when they think about Greek mythology, they think about God of War, as opposed to me when I was in fourth grade taking mythology class in elementary school. Like, I know who the fuck Zeus is and all of his children, that he was as a goat man.
I believe it's pronounced Zeus.
So this is very near and dear to my heart, this setting, this world. And when you take one of the most rich mythologies ever conceived. Characters, Hercules, the 12 gods, all of them in there.
Herpes.
And you combine that with
testicles.
Well, testicles. With the most incredible art style and the most like frenetic gameplay. That is, it's painful, yet so rewarding as you're going through it. I never felt more satisfied playing a game this year than with Hades. And playing it 10 times. 10 times for the actual true proper ending is a testament to how good it is. And it's all Hades. I can't. I love you, Cloud. I love you, Bear. I love you, Tifa. I love you, Sephiroth. But, man, it's all Hades for me.
For me, I played a lot of Hades this weekend or this weekend. Yeah, this weekend. I wanted to give it a fair shot. It reminded me of what I don't like about roguelike games or roguelikes or whatever you call them. There's a part of that. There's that mechanic that I just don't like. I don't like doing a run, dying, and having a couple of things, you know, minor things unlock, and then doing the run again. And I like to beat a game. I like the linearity of beating a game, whether it's I do a bunch of stuff on the side or whatever. I like that. If I do something over again, I want it to be my choice, like a Diablo. Oh, I want to do that chapter again, or I want to grind that for loot, or, you know, whatever. Like, I want that to be a choice that I make. That being said, I think that everything that the game does for that genre and for what it's trying to do is masterfully pieced together. The flow of combat, all of the abilities that you get, the powers, the boons, the relics that you could attach, not so much the cosmetic stuff for your room and like all that stuff. I didn't really care for that, but like everything else that it does, and even how it handles you dying and doing the run over again. It makes it so that it's not a pointless thing. The story continues based on your deaths and all of that stuff. It is really remarkable how they do it, and it does have that thing where it starts to turn off your brain a little bit and just makes you want to continuously go and go and go and go because it feels so good to play. But once I was at a point where I was like, okay, I want to take a break, I didn't have that hankering to go back to really like continue and try and get another run, because I felt like I wasn't meant to get a perfect run. I wasn't meant to beat the game. Anytime I sat down to play it, I didn't feel like I was meant to beat the boss at the end of the however many chapters it is. I was meant to fail so that I could get a little bit better, so that I could become super strong and like know everything about the game, and now I could finally do it. Like, that's what I feel like it was leading me up to. And that, to me, felt like what I guess is my main problem with roguelites is it's a cheap way to extend the game's life. I know that's not how it's designed. That's how it is for me because of how I play games and how I enjoy them. But I'm fully on board with how amazing the game really is and how it pieced everything together and pretty much perfectly. But I never had more fun, period, in any game this year than Final Fantasy VII Remake. The combat in that game is so fluid and beautiful and damn near perfect. It made you, Andy, you know that when you're playing an RPG and you're going around and you're going to fights to grind for leveling up, that you just don't like doing it. It's not fun to grind in JRPGs. It's just not. Right. You just do it and you hit the button. And you get through it, you get your little experience, and you move on.
Persona 5 made that better.
Sure. I did not play that game, and otherwise that might be on this list as well. It didn't make any category on... Oh, no, that was 2019, wasn't it?
That's an old game.
Yeah, that's old. It just came out, the whatever.
The Royal Edition,
that's right.
Right.
Final Fantasy VII Remake, I was looking to fight because of how fun it was. It reminded me of how 15 made you want to go and search out groups of enemies to fight. Like, it never got boring. The story that they were able to weave for a 40-hour game that took a 4-hour chunk of the original game and kind of expanded it. It never felt like fluff. With the exception of chapter 13, I think, which had you do some side quests that were kind of meaningless. But other than that, everything felt like it meant something. The story surprised me, even though I knew most of the beats. I think the voice acting was brilliant. It was a beautiful game. And I cannot wait to get my hands on the next part of this thing. So while I give all due respect to Hades, it is a two-horse race for me as well. But Final Fantasy VII Remake is going to take my vote right here. Purger.
Okay, so I didn't play Final Fantasy VII Remake, so I can't really speak on that. I think Fall Guys is at the bottom of the list for me. Yakuza Like a Dragon, I wanted to nominate here because it didn't really fit into any other category. That game is incredible. I've talked about it, it seems like, every single episode for the last 10 episodes that we've had. That game's amazing. The way they handle turn-based combat in a traditionally action-oriented game, pretty much the exact opposite of the thing that you see with Final Fantasy VII, is perfect. It's just so good. It fits into that world exactly right. You still feel like you can do these crazy bombastic combos. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Yakuza Like a Dragon because that game is hilarious and amazing. If this were my personal game of the year, Risk of Rain 2 would win in a heartbeat. I think that game might be perfect. It is so much fucking fun to play. Like, and it, like, it doesn't demand anything from you. It can be as simple or as deep as you want. There are some really incredible, like, underlying stats on all of the upgrades and all of the characters, or you can just get stuff that feel good and make you feel more powerful, and either way you can play the game really well. And each of the 10 characters are so unique and different in their play styles that it's almost like a completely new game if you choose a different character. And that's not even including compounding that by getting 1 to 3 of your friends to play with you to add these abilities in together. Risk of Rain 2, you can just pick up and you can play, and you can play it as long as you want. And like, it's there, you know, it's like comfort food. It's just there. And there's not this laundry list of things to unlock, like you were saying about Hades, Steve, that takes forever to grind out. You just start and you have all of these tools at your disposal, and it's so easy to just break the game and break the builds, and you can scale it to infinity. Risk of Rain 2 is probably my biggest surprise this year. I was not expecting to fall in love with this game. Risk of Rain 2 is incredible.
I don't want to derail you, but I do have a question about Risk of Rain 2.
Sure.
Does the rain ever actually come? Or is it only that there's a risk of it?
No, high risk
and
of rain.
Why is
always.
It so risky? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
It's just, it's very overcast all the time. You know?
Got it. Understood.
Yeah. Okay. So it's fixing to rain, as they say in the South. that game is amazing. I understand that this is the dual screens game of the year. And I'm not disappointed by this choice whatsoever, but my pick is also Hades. For everything that Andy said and so much more, Hades is incredible. The writing in that game and the style of that game are one of the most like underrated aspects of it. People love to talk about how fun the combat is and that like flow state that you get into and how deep it is. The story, the voice acting, the writing, and the art style of this game is incredible. It's very much the Persona 5 effect. This entire game just ties into this overall cohesion of a style, and it works so fucking well for what they're trying to do. The combat is impactful and satisfying, and the rush that you get defeating Hades, especially the first time, is second to none. Everything that you said that you dislike about roguelites are what I love about them. And so everything that you were saying as a bad thing is like ditto, except for good for me. I absolutely adore the direction that they went with this game. The depth that they have there with the different boons and how you can chain things together to create really fun and unique builds.
And the weapons feel so different too.
Exactly. It lends to
any kind of playstyle you can think of.
Yeah. Just like the different characters in Risk of Rain, like I was talking about, the game feels completely different playing with the sword versus the spear versus the shield versus the bow, or that fucking crazy rail gun thing.
I love it.
They
it's
have
the best shit ever.
I hate it. It's my least favorite weapon. But for me personally, I would have to put Hades as the dual screens game of the year.
All right, there it is. Do you guys know if The Departed, A Star Is Born, 310 to Yuma, do you know if any of those won like awards? True Grit.
Yeah, I'm sure they've all won best.
Right.
Best actor, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, best sound design, or you know. Yeah, they've all won.
Are you saying that Final Fantasy VII Remake is A Star Is Born in game form?
I'm saying it's the fact that it's a remake does not disqualify it from winning an award.
Absolutely not.
That's ridiculous.
In any way, shape, or form.
And I wonder if The Departed. I think The Departed did win one of those best picture awards from somewhere, but whatever. That's just a weird argument. Yeah, so there it is, folks. Oh shit. Oh my god. Oh goodness. I closed out my doc. Okay, here we go. So we got Hades taking game of the year. We're just going to go over one more time and just to let you know all of our awards before we get to the end of the show. The best indie game was Spiritfarer. The best multiplayer game was Fall Guys. Sony first party game was Ghost of Tsushima. Nintendo first party game was Animal Crossing New Horizons. Best Xbox first party game was Ori and the Will of the Wisps. Game of the year was Hades. And our nonsense awards are nonsense, so you don't really need to know them.
Yeah.
That is going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight. Andy, Taylor,
yes.
This was a good one.
Yes, it was.
This was interesting. I can't wait to do it next year. Hopefully, I get to play
like
more.
2 hours, though.
No,
shorter than that.
No. Yeah. It didn't. If you want to follow,
we spent 45 minutes talking about Call of Duty.
This is true. Folks, if you want to follow us on social media, we are at @dual_screens on Twitter and at NDS Podcast on Instagram. If you want to follow me, I'm at @batchild27. Andy's at @pantsguy. Taylor is at @itsperger. Facebook is Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/DS podcasts. And again, if you're watching this on youtube.tv/dualscreenstv, give us a sub and a thumbs up. And if you're watching on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams, hit that follow button, hit that heart. Let us know how much you love us. And if you're listening on your podcast service of choice, please leave us a review. It helps the show grow. That is going to do it for us. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. Thank you, later viewers. This has been Dual Screens Crossplay Podcast, Game of the Year Edition. And as always, please be excellent to each other.